Our lesson is in the 28th chapter of Deuteronomy. We had just gotten through the 49th verse, ready to begin with the 50th verse. He's talking about the curses that are going to come upon his people for their disobedience. And the last lesson we discussed this 49th verse and showed how the fulfillment of that actually was in the destruction of the city of Jerusalem, which occurred in A.D. 70, and which is spoken of in Matthew, the 24th chapter, and Luke, the 21st chapter. And let's read again that 49th verse. The Lord shall bring a nation against thee from far, from the end of the earth, as swift as the eagle flieth, a nation whose tongue thou shalt not understand. And as we look over here in Matthew, the 24th chapter, the 28th verse, Jesus said, For wheresoever the carcass is, there will the eagles be gathered together. And we see from that passage that the nation of Israel is going to be the carcass. The eagles are going to be the vultures or the giant birds that come in to partake of the carcass. Like we see the buzzards today on the side of the road gathered around the carcass of a dead animal. And Jesus used the term eagles, and the eagle was a standard of the Roman army. And in the prophecy in Deuteronomy, this 49th verse we just read, he says, As swift as the eagle flieth, a nation whose tongue thou shalt not understand. And this is fulfilled in all respects in that destruction of the city of Jerusalem and the nation of Israel by the Roman army. He further continues in verse 50, A nation of fierce countenance, which shall not regard the person of the old, nor show favor to the young. And he shall eat the fruit of thy cattle, and the fruit of thy land, until thou be destroyed, which also shall not leave thee either corn, wine, or oil, or the increase of thy kind, or flocks of thy sheep, until he have destroyed thee. And he shall besiege thee in all thy gates, until thy high and fenced walls come down, wherein thou trustedest, throughout all thy land. And he shall besiege thee in all thy gates, throughout all thy land, which the Lord thy God hath given thee. Talking there about the siege that's going to come upon Jerusalem at the time of the destruction by the Roman army. We read in Luke, the 21st chapter, where Jesus talks about this. In Luke 21, beginning with the 20th verse, and we're in the midst of the prophecy of Christ now, but we want to pick out a few verses that show the pertinent application of this prophecy. In the 20th verse of Luke 21, Jesus says that when ye shall see Jerusalem compassed with armies, then know that the desolation thereof is nigh. Now this being compassed with armies is when Titus's army surrounded the city of Jerusalem. It's spoken of in Matthew, the 24th chapter, verse 15. Again in Daniel 11:31, this is prophesied. And this is the time of the destruction now. Jesus says, verse 21, Then let them which are in Judea flee to the mountains, and let them which are in the midst of it depart out, and let not them that are in the countries enter thereinto. This is really a prophecy that is giving instruction to the people of God, the true people of God, which are going to be the members of the church, the Christians. And he's telling them what to do to avoid this great catastrophe that was going to come upon the city of Jerusalem. He said, those that are in Judea, let them flee to the mountains. Let them depart out of it, that are in the midst of it. And let them in the countries not enter thereinto. That is, don't go back into the city. Get out of the city. Leave the city. Flee to the mountains. And that is exactly what the people of God did. That's what the members of the church did. And they then were saved from this destruction. They were able to avoid this great catastrophe, but they did it only by following exactly what the Word of God, what the prophecies of God told them to do. And they were given specific instructions about this. This is again referred to in Hebrews, the 10th chapter. And Jesus goes on and says, For these be the days of vengeance, that all things which are written may be fulfilled. But woe unto them that are with child, unto them that give suck in those days, for there shall be great distress in the land, and wrath upon this people. Truly there was great distress in the land. There was over a million people slain, and about 100,000 were taken captive. Now that's a tremendous destruction of people. We can't imagine how many people that would be. It's like the whole city of Houston being put to death. And they shall fall by the edge of the sword, and shall be led away captive into all nations, and Jerusalem shall be trodden down to the Gentiles until the time to the Gentiles be fulfilled. Again, this is spoken of in Matthew 24, verses 16 through 28. And we see that this did happen, and it is still happening now. There is a time called the time to the Gentiles, a time in which the Gentile has predominance in the church, and that is existing even until this day. But when that time to the Gentile is fulfilled, then according to Romans, the 11th chapter, Israelites are going to be restored back into their rightful place as the natural olive branches that have been broken off. We don't know exactly when that's going to come to place, but it has yet to be fulfilled from all that I can determine from the Scriptures. But that's another subject entirely, but it is mentioned here by Jesus as he talks about this. And he talks about the fact that they're going to be led away captive into all nations, and we're going to read about that a little further in Deuteronomy, but that truly has come to pass. Anybody who knows anything at all about history can look and see how that the Jewish people have become captives in all nations. That is, they've been scattered, they've been abused, they have lost their privileges, they've lived many times as second-class citizens. In this nation, they've had a lot of persecution, although it's not as bad in this nation as in other places. So that's what he's talking about in this 28th chapter of Deuteronomy now, as he talks about this great curse that's going to come upon God's people for being disobedient. Verse 50, a nation of fierce countenance, which shall not regard the person of the old, nor show favor to the young. That's this Roman army. They were never going to have any regard for the people, for each individual person, for any kind of human rights, for the fact that they were young or old or infirm or unable to defend themselves. They had no regard for that. They were coming in to destroy this city and to conquer it, and that's exactly what they did. Verse 51 in Deuteronomy 28, and he shall eat the fruit of thy cattle and the fruit of thy land until thou be destroyed, which also shall not leave thee either corn, wine, or oil, or the increase of thy kind, or flocks of thy sheep, until he have destroyed thee. So the people are going to have their natural resources taken away from them, the increase of their cattle and their flocks and their sheep. This invader was going to eat of those things. They're going to take it away from them. Verse 52, and he shall besiege thee in all thy gates until thy high and fenced walls come down, wherein thou trustedest throughout all thy land. That is, all the cities that had walls would be surrounded and be besieged. And we're primarily talking about the city of Jerusalem. It was surrounded. There was a great siege. There was a great a famine that came upon the people as a result of this. And they were actually starved out. And we're going to read further here about some of the hideous things that were done. He talks about these high and fenced walls that will come down, wherein thou trustedest throughout all thy land. They had put their trust in these high walls. These walls they thought were going to defend them. Well, these walls were going to take care of any problem they may have with an invader. But what they didn't realize was that when they turned against God, and when God decides to bring one of these curses upon them or upon anyone, no physical structure is going to protect them. No amount of preparedness, no amount of being able to defend themselves is going to make any difference, because God is going to bring it about. And so they had put their trust in these walls, and he says they're going to come down, and they're going to besiege thee in all thy gates until the high and fenced walls come down. And so whatever defenses we may have today, if we're going against God, if we're not following the things that God really wants us to do and to follow, our walls are going to come down. Our defenses, the things that we have put our trust in, are going to let us down. And we're going to be found then very severely wanting, because we're not trusting in God. And he shall besiege thee in all thy gates throughout all thy land, which the Lord thy God hath given thee. Verse 53, and thou shalt eat the fruit of thine own body, the flesh of thy sons and of thy daughters, which the Lord thy God hath given thee, in the siege and in the straitness wherewith thine enemy shall distress thee. Now, this is a description of a very hideous situation of the people eating their own children, eating the flesh of their sons and their daughters, the children that the Lord had given them, because of the siege and because of the straitness or the persecution, the severe trial of physical distress that they were going to be in. And he talks about wherein thy enemy shall distress thee. They were going to be in a severe distress. And we have a case in history recorded of a woman who did eat her own child. And he talks of this as though it's going to happen more than one time. We have this also recorded in 2 Kings 6:28 and 29, where in another siege of the God's people, women are spoken of as eating their children. And in Lamentations 4 and 10, there's a prophecy about this. And it has to no doubt refer to this destruction of Jerusalem. So we have it from history and from the prophecy here also that the siege would be so bad that the people would eat their own children. That is, they would become so hungry, have such a lack of food, that they would resort to this animalistic practice, actually cannibalism, in order to try to survive. Verse 54, so that the man that is tender among you and very delicate, his eye shall be evil toward his brother and toward the wife of his bosom and toward the remnant of his children which he shall leave. So here the person that is a very tender person, the person that seemed like he would do no harm to anyone but have such a nice, friendly personality and be so peaceful, this person would turn. He'll turn so that his eye shall be evil toward his brother and toward the wife of his bosom and toward the remnant of his children which he shall leave. He's going to turn against everybody, his brother, his wife, his children. He's going to have an evil eye toward them. It's going to be a survival. I'm going to survive regardless of what it requires me to do. And if I have to turn against everyone, if I have to cause the death of other people, I'm going to survive. So he no longer is a tender and delicate person, but he now is an evil person that's turned against those around them. Verse 55, so that he will not give to any of them of the flesh of his children whom he shall eat. Now this person is going to take his children and eat their flesh, and he will not share it with the others. It's going to be really a situation in which not only would he commit the hideous act of eating his children, but he does it in such a way that nobody else gets to eat of them. He'll be the only one to survive. Very, very severe situation. So he will not give to any of them of the flesh of his children whom he shall eat, because he hath nothing left him in the siege and in the straitness wherewith thine enemy shall distress thee and all thy gates. Nothing left for survival but to eat his own children, and then he doesn't share them with any of the others. Then in verse 56, he talks about the same thing on the part of a woman. The tender and delicate woman among you, which would not adventure to set the sole of her foot upon the ground for delicateness and tenderness, her eyes shall be evil toward the husband of her bosom and toward her son and toward her daughter. So here's a woman that is so nice and kind and delicate and peaceful. She wouldn't even set the sole of her foot upon the ground because of the delicateness and tenderness of her character and her nature. Her eyes shall be evil toward the husband of her bosom, toward her son, and toward her daughter. And toward her young one that cometh out from between her feet, and toward her children which she shall bear. For she shall eat them in want of all things, secretly in the siege and straitness, wherewith thine enemy shall distress thee in thy gates. Now that's a very severe situation. It's almost nauseating to read about it. But the Bible is truthful and the Bible is plain, and it points out here the things that are going to happen. And if these people really took heed and took this prophecy to heart, they certainly wouldn't want to do anything that would bring this curse upon them. They would want to, at all costs, avoid having a curse like this brought upon them. And so, in the next verse, he re-explains to them what it's going to take to prevent this curse. He says in verse 58 of Deuteronomy 28, "If thou wilt not observe to do all the words of this law, which are written in this book, that thou mayest fear this glorious and fearful name, the Lord thy God, then the Lord will make thy plagues wonderful, and the plagues of thy seed, even great plagues, and of long countenance, and sore sicknesses, and of long continuance." So he says, if you do not observe to do all the words of this law that are written in this book. That's very plain what God wants. He wants an obedience. He wants a following of his commands. And he said this over and over again. This is the one central theme that goes throughout all of the Bible, Old Testament and New. He wants obedience. Jesus said in John 14, "If a man love me, he will keep my commandments." John says in 1 John chapter 2, verse 3, "And hereby we do know that we know him, if we keep his commandments. He that saith, I know him, and keepeth not his commandments, is a liar, and the truth is not in him. But whoso keepeth his word, in him verily is the love of God perfected. Hereby know we that we are in him." Now, John says that the only way you're going to know that you're in him, this is the proof, is to keep his word, keep his commandments. If you say that you love him, if you say that you know him, and you don't keep his commandments, you're a liar. And so that's what God wants. He wants the words of his law to be kept. And he describes that in this 58th verse. "If thou wilt not observe to do all the words of this law that are written in this book." Now he says, observe to do. Observe means that you have to see them. You have to know about them. You have to be acquainted with them. And then you do them. Observe to do. It can also mean that you observe your actions to be sure that your actions are consistent with the doing of his will. And if you do not do this, observe to do the words of this law that are written in this book, the plagues are going to come. The result of observing and doing the words of this law is that thou may fear this glorious and fearful name, the Lord thy God. He has a name. And here it's put in bold type, the Lord thy God. And the result of keeping his commandments, of observing to do the words of that are written in this book, the results are that you may fear this glorious and fearful name. To fear it means to have a respect for it, to have a reverence for it, to have a true perspective of what it really means. You do not take it lightly, frivolously, but you have a respect for this name. And truly we should today have a respect for this glorious and fearful name, the Lord thy God. You know, our civilization has so degenerated until man takes this name in vain in so many, many ways. He uses it in a lighthearted way. He mincingly takes it in vain on many occasions. Such expressions as, "my goodness gracious," or just to simply say "goodness." This is a minced way of defaming the name of God. And so we need to have a fear, that is a respect for this name, the Lord thy God. And the only way this respect comes is by truly keeping his commandments, because it's only through the keeping of his commandments that you can know him. Otherwise, you're a stranger to God. You're not a follower of God. You're not a child of God. We must keep his commandments. This is taught over and over again, Old Testament and New Testament. It's one of the most basic of all of the principles of the teaching of God. Keep his commandments. He wants that. And that's what he says here. If thou wilt not observe to do all the words of this law that are written in this book, that thou mayest fear this glorious and fearful name, the Lord thy God, then the Lord will make thy plagues wonderful, and the plagues of thy seed, even great plagues, and of long continuance, and sore sicknesses of long continuance. He talks about plagues. He talks about sicknesses. He talks about these things lasting long and continuing. That's what God has promised to his people who do not observe to do all the words of this law. And that's the reason that these terrible plagues came upon Israel. That's the reason for the destruction of the city of Jerusalem. That's the reason for the scattering of the people. That's the reason for all of these plagues and persecution that they've had down through the years. Not just because somebody decided to be unkind to this particular people and it just happened to be coincidentally that they picked on this people. It's because God prophesied that it would happen and he's bringing it about and has brought it about. And he goes on and further describes the things that are going to happen in verse 60. Moreover, he will bring upon thee all the diseases of Egypt which thou wast afraid of, and they shall cleave unto thee. Now, all these diseases of Egypt, it seemed as though Egypt had some diseases that God's people did not have. God protected his people from certain diseases. But when they became disobedient, when they begin to not follow his word, then if they want to live like Egypt, let them have the diseases of Egypt. And that's exactly what he's saying here. You were afraid of these diseases, but he's going to bring upon you, and they shall cleave unto thee. Not going to be something you just have and get over, but you're going to continue to have these diseases. And you know, even today, it's a very common thing to note that there are certain diseases that Christians do not have. We're talking about the venereal diseases. These are diseases that are a result of sin. Some kind of sexual sin is involved in the getting of a venereal disease, because if a husband and wife, if they are virgins at the time they marry, they've had no exposure to the venereal disease, and then if they remain faithful to each other, there's no need for them to worry about getting one of these diseases. But he talks here about this being one of the ways that he punishes his people. Let them have the disease that the sinners have. Let them have the disease that the Egyptians have. And you know, as we stop and think about Christianity, every aspect of Christianity is one toward the betterment of the spiritual as well as the physical side of our bodies. There's nothing about Christianity that does harm to our physical bodies. Everything is designed to help us from a physical standpoint as well as a spiritual standpoint. The type of practices, whether it be alcohol or tobacco or other drugs, whether it be improper eating habits, if we just turn to what God has said about these things and what God would want us to do, we're going to find that we'll do the things that are going to be the most healthy for our bodies, not the things that are going to cause us these unnecessary diseases. And he goes on in verse 61 and says, also every sickness and every plague which is not written in the book of this law, them will the Lord bring upon thee until thou be destroyed. Now there are many things that are not even written in the book. Many things he doesn't enumerate here. But he says you're going to have those sicknesses too. Every sickness and plague that's not written in the book of this law, the Lord's going to bring upon thee until thou be destroyed. So as we know, there are thousands of different kinds of illnesses, different kinds of sicknesses, whether it be infection or whether it be tumor, whether it be cancer, whether it be a chronic disease like blood pressure or heart or lung or diabetes, doesn't matter, many, many illnesses. And God has said here that he can use these to be among the plagues that he's going to bring upon them for their disobedience. Now, we're not saying that every time a person gets one of these diseases, it's because God is punishing him. But we are saying that these diseases are present, and God has said that he will use them on his people as a punishment for a disobedience. Verse 62, and ye shall be left few in number, whereas you were as the stars of heaven for multitude, because thou wouldest not obey the voice of the Lord thy God. He's going to leave you few in number. Now, you were like the stars of heaven for multitude. You were a very abundant in number. But because of these sins, you're going to be left few in number. You're going to be a minority. Now, this could be applied in several ways. You know, when a group of people are all together and they don't know anybody but themselves, and they form a large society, they have numbers in the fact that everybody else among them is a minority and they are the majority. But when they're scattered, they could even be the same in number and be a minority every place that they are, so that any place they are, people like them are few in number and they're always a minority. And that's the way God's people have been in many, many situations. Even today, the church situation, they are a minority when you compare them to those round about them. But when the church comes together and only members of the church are there, they're no longer just few in number, but they then are the majority, and they then are the predominating people in that particular situation. But he says that they're going to be left few in number, whereas you were as the stars of heaven for multitude, because thou wouldest not obey the voice of the Lord thy God. Simply by disobeying, these things are brought upon them. Verse 63. And it shall come to pass, that as the Lord rejoiced over you to do you good and to multiply you, so the Lord will rejoice over you to destroy you and to bring you to naught, and you shall be plucked from off the land whither thou goest to possess it. So we see here where God is reminding them of his ability to do good to them or to do evil to them. And when I say evil, I mean to cause their fortunes to reverse, so that they then are in a state of distress rather than a state of bliss. So just as he at one time rejoiced over you and did good to them and to multiply them, he can do just the opposite of that. And we need to remember that today. We may be ever so prosperous today. We may be flourishing. We may be on the very top of the pinnacle of success. And of course, many of us are. Maybe we don't realize it, but we are. God has so abundantly and so bountifully blessed us. But remember, this same God, if we elect to be disobedient, if we elect to not to serve him, if we elect not to carry out his commands, this same God then can cause the very reverse of all of our good pleasure. He can cause us to be destroyed, to be brought to nothing, and to be plucked from off the land wherein thou goest to possess it. Here he's talking specifically about Canaan, but the principle can apply to many, many situations. We can be plucked from off the land that he's given us. He can bring us to nothing. Now, we think we're something, and maybe we are to some extent something, but God can bring us to nothing. Bring us down so low that we can't imagine how low we are. Simply by being disobedient. By not obeying the voice of the Lord thy God. This is the crowning principle that goes throughout the Bible. Disobedience brings distress. Disobedience brings the wrath of God. And obedience brings the good pleasure of God. Obedience causes the Lord to rejoice over you, to do good to you, and to multiply you. Verse 64. And the Lord shall scatter thee among all people, from the one end of the earth even unto the other. Now this is really the final curse that he talks about, the ultimate curse being brought upon God's people. That curse is still being fulfilled even today. We have to believe that it began with the destruction of Jerusalem, and it is even being completed even today. The Lord shall scatter thee among all people from the one end of the earth even unto the other. We turn back here to Luke, the 21st chapter, verse 24. And we notice what Jesus said. And they shall fall by the edge of the sword, and shall be led away captive into all nations. And Jerusalem shall be trodden down of the Gentiles until the time of the Gentiles be fulfilled. Now that's what Jesus said, and it's exactly what he says in Deuteronomy. They'll fall with the edge of sword and be led away captive into all nations. That certainly has been fulfilled. The Jewish people have been led away captive into all nations. I don't mean that they necessarily have to be a slave or a servant, but they have to bow to the customs and the ways of these other nations. They are not able to preside in the other nations as a Jewish nation. They have to hold on to their identity as a small group, but yet merge into the cultures of the other nations. God has forced that upon them. It's a prophecy that's given here in Deuteronomy 28, and it's a prophecy that Jesus again gave, and it's one that we can readily see is being fulfilled. History adequately describes it, and all we have to do is look around about us and see today how it is still being fulfilled. So the Lord shall scatter thee among all people, even from the one end of the earth, even unto the other, and there thou shalt serve other gods, which neither thou nor thy fathers have known, even wood and stone. So we're talking about serving other gods. We're talking about serving idolatry. We're talking about serving something that the true and living God did not prescribe for his people and still does not prescribe even today, but they're forced to serve these things. Now one may say, well, the Jewish people, for the most part, they continue their Jewish identity. They still follow their religion. They haven't converted over to any other faith or any other religious practice. And so maybe this hadn't really been fulfilled. But as we look at reality, we see that it has been fulfilled. For in this day and time, they have no temple, they have no altar, they have no priesthood. They have really lost a major part of their religious identity in that area. And also we see that they have bowed down to the customs of paganism and idolatry. Now, as you know, the great paganistic practices have been incorporated into the great apostate church. And among these practices are the observance of many of these religious holidays that the Bible does not prescribe. The Bible does not indicate that Christians are to follow these things at all, but they've always been followed by the paganistic idolatrous practices, and they've been incorporated into the fallen away church. They're a part of that church now, and we see that the Jewish people have bowed down to these things. The most crowning of all of these paganistic holidays is the observance of Christmas, as we well know. It is not documented in the Bible at all. The things that they do take from the Bible, they twist out of the proper application. The wise men did not come to the manger on the night Jesus was born. They came about 6 weeks later. They came bearing gifts to a king, not birthday presents. Jesus was not in the manger when they came. He was living in a house. He had already been to Jerusalem, and he was at least 6 weeks old at that time. So the stories are twisted out of the true context. At no time are Christians ever instructed to observe the birthday of Jesus. We do not know exactly when it was, except we know that it was not December the 25th. That is a lie. The myth about Santa Claus is a lie. On and on. We're just trying to show here that these things have all been borrowed from paganism and put into the apostate church so that they could convert the paganistic believers without them having to really change their practices any. And so we see the Jewish people have been forced to bow to these things. They make their living by selling goods that people buy at Christmas time. And so they put the Christmas decorations up in their stores, and they pretend like they go along with these things, and they bow to them to a very large extent. And so they're serving other gods, which neither thou nor thy fathers have known, even wood and stone. And they'll put up these images. They'll put up the Santa Claus and so on, knowing that it's a lie, knowing that it's not according to God's will, but they do it. They seem to be forced to do it in order to get along in this society. And they're not obeying God when they do this. This is another disobedience of God. And he goes on in verse 65, and among these nations thou shalt find no ease, neither shall the sole of thy foot have rest, but the Lord shall give thee there a trembling of heart, or a trembling heart, and a failing of eyes, and a sorrow of mind. So you're not going to find any rest there. You're going to have a trembling heart, a failing of eyes, and a sorrow of mind. They're never really going to be satisfied, never content, never happy. always in a situation of instability and unrest because they're not really following after God. Verse 66, "And thy life shall hang in doubt before thee, and thou shalt fear day and night, and thou shalt have none assurance of thy life." Why, it can even be so bad that their life is in jeopardy. They're in fear of their very existence. "The life shall hang in doubt before thee, and shall have fear day and night." We've seen this happen. Now, maybe it doesn't happen every place there are Jewish people. We know that. But it does happen. It has been brought to pass time and time and time again. Jewish people have actually been put to death. As we know, some of the great atrocities in World War II, where millions were put to death. And that could be very likely a greater fulfillment of this prophecy. And he goes on and describes the very woeful unhappy situation in verse 67. "In the morning thou shalt say, Would God it were even. And at even thou shalt say, Would God it were morning." They're just not going to be content. In the morning they wish it were evening. In the evening they wish it were morning. "For the fear of thine heart, wherewith thou shalt fear, and for the sight of thine eyes, which thou shalt see." So far removed from their original practice, their original habitat, on into many generations, still longing to have the true things of Israel, the true things of God. All caused by disobedience. All caused by not following after the things which are stated in the Word of God. Then in verse 68, "And the Lord shall bring thee into Egypt again with ships. By the way whereof I spake unto thee, thou shalt see it no more again." Now, here he's talking about the fact that they're going to be brought back into Egypt. Now, what are we talking about when we say Egypt? Egypt is a symbol of captivity, a symbol of bondage, a symbol of not having a land, not having a place of their own, a symbol of being under the dominance of other rulers that are not the people of God. And he says, "The Lord shall bring thee into Egypt again with ships." Now, we don't know exactly what this means, what kind of a fulfillment this would require. But he's talking about somehow or other getting back into this situation like they were when in Egypt in a state of bondage. "By the way whereof I spake unto thee, thou shalt see it no more again." Now in the 17th chapter of Deuteronomy, verse 16, he did say that very plainly. When he was talking about the king that they should have, he says, talking about the things that the king could and could not do, "But he shall not multiply horses to himself, nor cause the people to return to Egypt, to the end that he should multiply horses. For as much as the Lord has said unto you, ye shall henceforth return no more that way." Now, God had said very plainly, he did not intend for them to go back to Egypt. He brought them out of Egypt, and he does not want them to go back. And the same is true of us today in a spiritual sense. When we've been brought out of this state of bondage, this Egyptian bondage, we've crossed over the waters of baptism into the church age, the church territory, which is really figuratively still in the wilderness, and we're looking to get to Canaan, we then are not to go back into Egypt. We're not to go back to those beggarly things that God has delivered us out of. We're not to want to go back. You know, the people did want to go back. They wanted to go back and eat those delicacies they had in Egypt. They were tired of this manna from heaven and so on. And God punished them for that, wanting to do that. But even today, we're not to want to go back. But you know, if we want to badly enough, and if we desire to, and if we try to, God will let us go back. He'll take us back. And that's what he's saying to his people here. He's going to bring them to Egypt again with ships. And although he said, "Thou shalt see it no more again," he instructed them not to go back. Part of their punishment will be to make them go back, to make them be captives, to make them be slaves, a nation that doesn't exist any longer, a nation that doesn't have its own identity and its own rule. And we today, as individuals, can be made to go back into Egypt. There we can serve gods which neither thou nor thy father have known as Christians, even wood and stone. And we can be in a situation which we find no ease, in which our foot shall have no rest. But the Lord will give thee there a trembling of heart, a failing of eyes, and sorrow of mind. And thy life shall hang in doubt before thee, and thou shalt have fear day and night, and shall have none assurance of thy life. We can be in a situation like that. Each one of us is individuals. A deep state of depression and distress, simply because we're not following after God, and brought back to Egypt again. And then his last phrase in verse 68 is, and there, talking about Egypt, and there ye shall be sold unto your enemies for bondmen and bondwomen, and no man shall buy you. You're going to be sold to your enemies, just like God's people were originally. Joseph was sold into slavery, sold to his enemies. And they became his enemies. And that will happen to God's people when they disobey him. And he brings this plague or this curse upon them. But he says, and no man shall buy you. That's even a worse state. You're going to be so undesirable, so unwanted wherever you go, that nobody even wants to buy you. You'll be sold, but you're going to be sold at a low price because you're considered to be worthless. Now, you know, a slave that's expensive, that really costs his master a lot of money, that slave is going to be taken well care of. He's going to have a good place to sleep and good food to eat and try to be kept in a healthy condition. But a slave is so worthless that no man wants to buy them and they sell for such a low price, he's going to be given the very worst of all treatment. And that's what God says about his people here. You'll be sold to your enemies for bondmen and bondwomen, and no man shall buy you. So we see then the importance of not disobeying God. The importance of keeping his word. Because these plagues, these curses that he talks about here, are not just things that he's writing down just to take up space. They are a reality. They have really been brought to pass. And they still can be brought to pass, even yet. And so we have to take note. This is life. This is the way it is. This is what God says. This is what our Maker says. And if we take it lightly, then we're going to suffer the consequences. Well, we'll conclude there since this is the end of the 28th chapter. Next time, Lord willing, beginning with chapter 29. Thank you.